Well, Jeff, you were general manager of the Vikings team here for a long time. You worked in this market for a long time. You were president of the Tennessee Titans when they almost won a Super Bowl. We are now sitting here watching the Timberwolves take the NBA by storm. We're seeing Tim Connelly's decisions play out in real time as being brilliant. We're also seeing the Twins having an amazing month, 12-game winning streak, rising to the top of the division. And, you know, I know the Twins people pretty well. I know a lot of the Timberwolves people pretty well. What was it like for you when you were winning, and what was it like for you when other teams in the market were winning? Was there much conversation between general managers and team presidents? Did you root for each other?
Absolutely. And I always felt, Jim, that it was really positive for our teams, whether it was the Vikings or the Titans, when the other teams in town were doing well. I thought it created an environment that was really positive sports-wise in the city. I never felt competitive with those other teams, and I had a really good relationship with Andy McPhail when he ran the Twins, and with Tom Kelly. We would always go down to Fort Myers during spring break and head over to Captiva Island, but we'd stop in Fort Myers and go see a spring training game. And I remember Andy inviting me up to his office at whatever the stadium's called. I can't remember the name.
Hammond Field, but it's changed names over the years.
Exactly. And I remember one time we were sitting right behind the dugout, and Tom Kelly came out and said hi to my son, who I think was about 7 or 8 at the time. And the Twins were in their heyday obviously the World Series run and Kirby Puckett and Herbex and all those guys. So yeah, I always rooted for the other teams in town. We had North Star season tickets back in the day. We would go to certainly to a lot of Gopher basketball games and the Twins and the Wolves early in their year. We had a great story. I am very close friends with Bob Stein, who was the original president of the Wolves, as you know. And I remember Bob getting us tickets for the first game. Remember the first game at the Metrodome?
Yes.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
and we had a blast and always rooted for them too. So I think it's great. I think it's positive, and I think you can see people like Justin Jefferson showing up at the Wolves games, and I'm sure a lot of the Wolves players and Twins players show up at Viking games, and I think it's a real positive thing for the entire city. It kind of builds a sports city attitude similar to what Boston had for many years with the Patriots and the Red Sox. I think it's great.
More on that, and we're also going to get to Jeff's aftermath of the draft, his draft grades, his evaluation of the NFC North teams. I also want to ask him about what we now know about the Vikings draft board, where they had quarterbacks ranked, what his expectations for McCarthy might be in a rookie year. We'll get into all that. This is Jeff Diamond's Vikings and NFL Insider. He's Jeff Diamond, as I mentioned before, former Vikings general manager, former president of the Tennessee Titans. This is TalkNorth.com. If you like any show at TalkNorth.com, including this one, please subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It's free. It's the easiest way to listen. And we're coming to you from the Aquarius Home Services Studio. We also want to thank our longtime sponsor, White Bear Lake Superstore, whitebearlakesuperstore.com. Also, my friend Scott Dayton, Twill by Scott Dayton in the Edina Galleria, is having a Grayson event on Friday. Buy three, get one free. All his stuff is great. Go check it out and tell him we sent you. So to follow up on that, you know, I covered Andy and Tom Kelly. They were really good to me. I thought they were really, you know, they were good people. And, you know, I covered you. I covered Mike Glenn. I covered a lot of different Vikings personalities. I think it's a really interesting dynamic in the market right now. Derek Falvey's a really good guy. Rocco's a really good guy. The Twins like inviting people from other teams to come hang out with them during games. And I think that Connelly and Finch have been up in Falvey's booth during games to hang out. Connelly's a really social guy. Finch is a really social guy. I think Kwesi and O'Connell are good people, but I also think they're kind of in the football mode where they're just always working. They don't do much outside football. Bill Guerin, I think, is kind of a little more isolated, not as gregarious as the others. But I think the Timberwolves people and the Twins people really like each other and even spend some time together.
Yeah, I think that's great, and you can see the kind of the personalities in the organizations. And as you said, I think certainly there's a lot of things to like about the Wolves people at the top and the Twins people at the top. And I'm sure Bill Guerin is a good guy in his own realm. And the same thing with Kwesi and Kevin, who I've gotten to know a little bit. And so, yeah, I think it's all positive, as we said, and supporting each other, I think is valuable for the teams. And as I said, just creates that really good sports market.
So you and I both know that doing draft games right after the draft is kind of ridiculous, but we also know that's what people want. And we have to, offer whatever insights we might have or opinions we might have. So where did you end up falling when you did your final draft grades? Who did you like, and what did you think of the division?
Well, as far as the division, I really felt that the division did very well. And of course, starting with the Vikings, and we talked about this last week, and I gave them in my draft grades an A-. And it's interesting when you see some of the people around the country who do this. And I saw Mel Kiper, for example, ESPN, gives the Vikings a C+. But his reasoning was because they gave up so many draft choices to move up, first of all, to get that extra pick from Houston. They gave up a second next year. And then to move up to take Dallas Turner, they gave up a third and a fourth. Well, I think part of the thing that Mel skips over is that the Vikings are very likely to gain a third-round pick next year as a compensatory pick for the departures of Kirk Cousins and Danielle Hunter. And they may get another compensatory pick from losing DJ Wanham, although that may be offset by signing guys like Grenard and Van Ginkel and Cashman. But I think they're certainly going to get a very high pick for the Cousins signing and probably a third-round pick. So, and the reality is, if J.J. McCarthy and Dallas Turner become impact players, even in their rookie year or after that, they're both 21 years old, of course. And so if those guys become elite players, no one's going to care about the second, third, and fourth round picks that they gave up to move up to get these guys. And that's the truth of the matter. And then you look at the other players that they drafted. I think there's some interesting guys. Kyrie Jackson, the corner, I think he's going to be a guy that Flores is going to like and have a good chance to maybe jump ahead of guys like Caleb Evans and Andrew Booth Jr. and Mekhi Blackmon. I still like Blackmon more than the other two, who have been so inconsistent, and Booth hasn't been able to stay healthy. The kicker, he's got a good leg. I think he could be a really impact kicker even as a rookie. And I think the other thing that I like about some of these draft picks, I'm talking specifically about McCarthy, Turner, and Will Reichard, the kicker, they played at very big school football powers, Michigan, Alabama. They're used to playing in big games under pressure in front of 100,000 people. And I don't think that's going to phase them compared to some of the smaller school players, perhaps. And so I think that's a real positive for the team to draft players like that. And so I gave the Vikings an A-. Even some of the later round picks, Walter Rouse, the tackle, Juergens, the center guard, and Drake Rodriguez, the defensive tackle, they've got some intriguing traits. They're potential depth players this season, maybe future starters, we'll see. The Bears, I thought, did well. We've talked before about Caleb Williams. I need to see it to believe it, that he's a future top five QB. Who's going to take the Bears to the promised land? We'll see. He's got the arm strength, the off-schedule ability, threw 72 TD passes in college, but he also threw 3 interceptions against Notre Dame last season. And I don't like his sense of entitlement that needs to be controlled. It's kind of an offshoot of the whole NIL era, I think, when these players are highly paid in college and have a lot of sponsorships, endorsements, and so he needs to be controlled. And Adunze, certainly combining him with DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, that's going to be a tough group to handle. And so I like the Bears draft. I gave them an A-. The Lions needed help at corner after they had to cut Cam Sutton for off-season issues, and they weren't great at corner anyway, so they draft Terry and Arnold and Anis Rakestraw in the first and second round. These guys are really top corners. Will definitely help Detroit, and they have some other interesting picks down the road. Now, the thing with the Lions, they did not pick an edge rusher as they were expected to do. So my question with them, are they really counting on Marcus Davenport to stay healthy, which he wasn't able to do in New Orleans or here in Minnesota the last 2 years? So I did give the Lions an A-minus just because of that great work at corner, which was a big need for them. The Packers, I gave them a B. Jordan Morgan, their first-round tackle, he should be a solid player at tackle or if he's moved inside. I really liked their pick of Edgerrin Cooper, the first linebacker taken. They traded down four spots and picked up a fifth and sixth-round pick and still got Cooper, who was the highest-rated linebacker in the draft and very productive, athletic. And so he can step in and help them. As far as the rest of the league, Jim, I thought the Eagles did great. They drafted two excellent corners, Quinion Mitchell in the first round, Cooper Dejean in the second round to help their pass defense that really was their undoing last year. Pittsburgh and Washington, I thought, really did well. The Steelers with the first round tackle, Fautana. They got a kind of an interesting third-round receiver, Roman Wilson, who was J.J. McCarthy's top target at wide receiver. And then Washington, of course, gets Jaden Daniels, who I think could easily end up being a better player than Caleb Williams. We'll see how that plays out. But they also hit on several other top picks and a really good first draft for their new GM, Adam Peters. It looks like the Commanders may be starting to turn the corner. And then I think, as we talked last week about the Chiefs, they find a way, even drafting at the bottom of the first round, and they move up four spots, trade with Buffalo, of all teams, one of their big competitors in the AFC, and they go out and get Xavier Worthy, the fastest receiver in the draft. They never really replaced Tyreek Hill after he was traded. And of course, my worst draft grade has to go to Atlanta for picking Michael Penix Jr., who I think is a really good player, but he's injury prone and logically will have to sit for 2 years behind Kirk Cousins because he's got $100 million guaranteed, Cousins does, and unless Cousins gets hurt or performs poorly, which we don't expect. And so I definitely did not like the Falcons making that move. But I thought it was a fascinating draft, and I thought the NFC North did very well. I think they're setting themselves up to be potentially the best division in the league this year and probably will have three or four playoff teams, so we'll see. But the other thing that I think was kind of interesting to look at, Jim, you look around the league, and we could talk about this after our break here, but the NFC North, I think, is shaping up as the most intriguing division in the NFL for quarterbacks in 2024. And I wrote about that for the 33rd team this week. We could talk about that and I can give you my logic there.
Well, let's definitely get to that. First of all, let's thank White Bear Lake Superstore, whitebearlakesuperstore.com.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. The White Bear Lake Superstore, Buick GMC, with my great friend owner, Paul Rubin, general manager, Charlie Guttrell, their fantastic staff, Minnesota's number one volume Buick GMC dealer, 6 years running, with the best selection and their super friendly premium team. Check out their great website, whitebearlakesuperstore.com. You'll see the first ever Invista. It defies the most characteristics, starting at $25,880. The GMC Hummer EV pickup and SUV is the world's first all-electric super truck. See 1.9% APR and a $3,250 purchase allowance on 2024 GMC Sierra 1500s. And 0.9% APR and a $750 purchase allowance on 2024 Buick Encore GX with no monthly payments for 90 days on those vehicles. The White Bear Lake Superstore also is the Quigley 4x4 Van Superstore. They are a certified elite dealer. Only 7% of GM dealers make the cut. Visit in person at 3900 Highway 61 North in White Bear Lake or online at whitebearlakesuperstore.com. For all your vehicle needs and the premium experience, Buick GMC, we are professional grade.
And thanks again to TwillMN.com, Twill and the Edina Galleria, Scott Dayton Shop. They've been sponsoring this podcast forever, helped us get it rolling. Reminder, Grayson event Friday. Sign up for email notifications when they have events. They will not spam me to death. TwillMN.com. Great store, great people. Go check them out. Tell them we sent you. So let's get to the NFC North and the quarterbacks and the intrigue.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Jim, we always have to preface it by saying quarterbacks almost always are the biggest stories around the NFL, since it's the most important position in the game and maybe all of sports as far as difficulty. And I think this is shaping up as a really fascinating year for quarterback intrigue across the NFL. Aaron Rodgers back to the Jets from injury, Russell Wilson and Justin Fields in Pittsburgh. The extension list so far, Dak Prescott, Tua Tagovailoa, Trevor Lawrence, and then you have the other injured quarterbacks coming back, Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert. You've got Daniel Jones in New York, Anthony Richardson's in Indy, and Kirk Cousins in Atlanta with Michael Penix Jr. breathing down his neck. Other interesting intrigue, can Lamar Jackson get to a Super Bowl? Can Deshaun Watson justify the trade by the Browns finally? What will Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud do in year two? How will the six rookie quarterbacks perform? And above all, will Patrick Mahomes lead the first three-peat Super Bowl winner in NFL history? But when I kind of looked at the league division by division at quarterback, I think it's a tight race, and it's hard to say the NFC North is a better quarterback division than the AFC North, where you've got Burrow, you got Jackson, you got now Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, you got Watson if he gets his act together in Cleveland. But I think the NFC North potentially is one of the best divisions for quarterbacks, and I think it has the most intrigue. And I'll start most experienced. Jared Goff overcame being an afterthought in the Matthew Stafford trade to take the Lions to 14 wins last year and almost to the Super Bowl. Can he get the Lions to the Super Bowl? Can he get his big contract extension at over $50 million a year that he's looking for now? Jordan Love in Green Bay, not so great the first half of the season. Then he caught fire, as did the Packers, went 6-2 down the stretch, got into the playoffs, had a stretch at the end of the regular season, 18 touchdown passes and one interception, included the big upset at Detroit on Thanksgiving, the big win at home over Kansas City in an upset. And then in the wild card round, they demolish Cowboys, take a 27-0 lead in the second quarter, and Love had a near-perfect passer rating in that game with three touchdown passes. He also, in the NFC divisional round, almost led the Packers to an upset in San Francisco, had the ball, three-point deficit in the late in the game, final 2 minutes, and threw an interception into double coverage. Well, he'll learn from that, but he certainly looks to be the next franchise quarterback in Green Bay. The intrigue there, can he do what his predecessors, Rodgers and Favre, did, which is take the Packers to another Super Bowl? And he leads a young, talented team. Caleb Williams in Chicago comes in the spotlight, the pressure from being the top pick in the draft, and he'll be compared constantly with the other six first-round quarterbacks, including J.J. McCarthy, including Jaden Daniels, who was picked right behind him, Drake May. And Williams has a lot of pressure on him, seems to have the confidence to get it done. We'll see. Certainly, he has a good supporting cast coming in, as we talked about. And so we'll see how that one plays out, and that will be certainly a big story in Chicago. We know that they're, it's such a passionate fan base for the Bears, and they're very hungry. They've missed the playoffs the last 3 years, been 18 years since their last Super Bowl appearance. And then you throw J.J. McCarthy in the mix, and who I'm projecting to be the starter sooner than later, perhaps opening day. We'll see. He's a smart young guy, and obviously he's undergoing a crash course starting now in the offseason program, and OTAs and mini camp coming up, and then training camp. If he's the more talented player, I don't think Kevin O'Connell's going to have any pause in playing him as a rookie. And so, but he's going to have to beat out Sam Darnold at least this year. And so I think McCarthy, the knocks on him coming in was that he wasn't asked to carry a run-oriented team in Jim Harbaugh's offense at Michigan. But O'Connell, as we know, pointed out that McCarthy made plays when he needed to and was very efficient in third and long as a runner or as a passer. And as we said, he comes in with the best supporting cast of any of those six rookie quarterbacks this year, with Jefferson, Hockenson, Addison, Aaron Jones, two excellent offensive tackles in Darrisson O'Neal. I still think they need to add some more help at the interior offensive line spots at the guard position. We'll see if they can get Dalton Risner back. But certainly McCarthy will be a huge story in Vikings camp. We know that starting now and definitely when OTA's mini camp and training camp come. And of course, the hope here is, can he lead the Vikings to a Super Bowl in the future? Something that hasn't happened since my rookie season, Jim. And I hate to say it, that was 48 years ago in 1976. And so the pressure's on McCarthy, along with Goff, Love, and Williams in the NFC North. I think it's really the most intriguing quarterback division.
Yes. In future episodes of Jeff Diamond's Vikings and NFL Insider, we'll talk about the salary cap, where they might get draft picks, if they need the draft picks, if they can spend their way to a better team a year from now. We'll get into all kinds of stuff around the league. The schedule will be released soon. That'll be great fodder for us as well. For today, let's wrap it up with this. Some reporting by my colleagues at the Star Tribune is that the Vikings really wanted to trade up and get Drake May at number 3. The Patriots wanted a lot. They weren't willing to give up what it took to get there. So that's when they decided that McCarthy and keeping that second first-round pick and getting a good defender like Dallas Turner was the way to go. Your thoughts on that scenario?
Yeah, I think that that's pretty well documented and not surprising. With Josh McCown having a great connection to Drake May back in North Carolina in high school, coached him there. And Drake May, certainly a big, strong-armed guy who is athletic enough to move around, I'm sure the Vikings figured they couldn't get to Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, so they were kind of targeting Drake May. We'll see how it all plays out in the future. But if McCarthy develops as they hope, and if Dallas Turner turns into the next Danielle Hunter at edge rusher, I'm sure they'll end up being very happy with how it turned out to have kept those two first-round picks and not having traded the two first-round picks and next year's number one in order to go up to get May, as was rumored. So that would have been a big price to pay. I think, as I said, it's hard to say right now if that was the right call or not, but it's really kind of a moot point because New England didn't want to do it anyway. So as it turns out, it doesn't even matter in the final analysis. And certainly for the Vikings to give up more than three number ones to move up to number 3 in the draft would not have been a wise move at all. So I think it looks good with what they got, and especially when you add into the equation, you got a really athletic, high potential young quarterback who has a winning pedigree, and then you add perhaps the best edge rusher in the draft. Now, both of those guys, I think, need to bulk up a little bit. They're both a little bit on the thinner side. Not really thin, but they could add a little more weight so that JJ can handle the hits he's going to take as an NFL quarterback. And so Dallas Turner can handle the really physical offensive tackles that he's going to face in the league. We know he'll be a great speed rusher with that 4.46 40, but the best pass rushers, of course, need to have the whole repertoire. They need to be able to have the power move inside, to be able to have the speed outside. That's what I saw from Chris Dolman for years and years with the Vikings, and that's what the Khalil Macks of the world and the Nick Boses bring. They can do it both. They can power rush, they can speed rush, and that's what Dallas Turner needs to work, get a little more weight on him, but yet not lose his speed. And I'm sure that's what they're working on as soon as they can get him and I think rookie camps is actually this weekend. So I'm sure they're going to get him in the weight room and get him started in that process. So it all shapes up, Jim, as creating a lot more excitement, as we talked about last week, for the season ahead. I think it's great for the Vikings to have these two young guys that the fans will be focused on, and even their teammates will be watching very closely, and the coaches in OTAs, mini camp, training camp. It's going to create a lot of excitement, just as Anthony Edwards is creating a lot of excitement for the Wolves, along with Cat and his cohorts there.
Yes, the Timberwolves are now the Purple People Eaters. I got to come up with a better new nickname for them. So if you have any ideas, let me know. We can talk about that next week. For this week, great stuff from Jeff. Thank you all for listening. Check out the Viking Update Show. Check out the John Krasinski Show on the Timberwolves. Check out all of our other sports content, our Ron Shara production podcasts, and our variety shows, including Mike, and we also have Mike Grimm on the Gophers. Check it all out at talknorth.com. Subscribe to the shows you like. We do appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.